Wesley, my brother, what's up?
Oh, man, we did a good rack and stack yesterday, and we have another couple today, and we get to start with an absolutely beaming, smiling face with Kelsey Dangerfield.
Yeah, exactly. I thought about this the other day, thinking about this week of four or five of them coming up, and because we like to do the rack and stacks, and I said, could it get any better? And I was trying to think of a way that it could get better, but it can't. This is just it.
There is a beauty to being able to love what you do and do what you love. You know?
There is. And we might have talked about that before.
Just a couple times.
And you talk about that a lot and other things you do about, you know, that's kind of a message that we have for everybody, both of us together or individually, is, man, if you're not loving what you do and doing what you love, you need to, not saying leave today without a paycheck, right? But you need to figure that out, right? It's just, life is so much better when you just love it.
Yeah, there really needs to be a part-time or a sometime part-time full-time transition that you do. And it doesn't seem like it, it seems like it can take a long time. But, when you really, kind of put that sometime part-time full-time, steps into it, you can be, doing whatever you want in months to years very mm-hmm. easily.
Exactly. And man, I know you're the same, and we'll get to Kelsey, but because I know she lives the same life. It's doing what she loves, loving what she does. And it's like, you work a lot. We probably work more than people that just do a 9-to-5, maybe, as far as time on the quote job, if you will, but we're never working because we love it. Right. And that's the beauty of it.
I worked quite literally from the time I woke up yesterday until 8:30 last night, and I wouldn't have come upstairs except I could feel my wife glaring at me, through the door, because my lights in the war room had already went off. So, when you're doing what you love, it doesn't seem like a job.
It does not. It does not. And you know what's not going to seem like a job?
What's that?
Chatting with Kelsey.
So well, let's get to it.
I see that that glare in your eye. You're already getting tired of listening.
Yeah, that's just me being tired.
So that's what it is. Cause you worked till 8:30 last night.
That's right.
You got yelled at by your wife for working till 8:30. So
that's right.
There we go. Okay. Let's go.
All right.
I'm done.
Welcome to Building Wins Live with host, the hybrid road warrior himself, Randy Chafee, and producer-director Wes Wyatt.
Whether we're talking about sales, marketing, tech, or industry news, we want to bring you the best tips, tricks, and info to build wins.
Now, let's get to the show.
Kelsey, what's happening?
How's it going?
Yeah, we've already established, if you were listening, follow along. Loving it, living it, knowing it. That's what we're doing, right?
Yeah, I loved what you guys were saying about the loving what you do, doing what you love, and the ability to do like a sometime transition to a part-time transition to a full-time transition. And that like completely hit the nail on the head for my journey. And I was like, yep.
So. That's spot on. So that's an incredible segue that we did not practice off air, did we? That's brilliant. Brilliant minds. It's amazing. So Kelsey Dangerfield of the, I'm going to get this right and write it down. The virtual integrator. I love that. What the heck does that mean? And what do you do? Who is Kelsey? And let's go. Let's get right into this thing.
Okay. I'm Kelsey Dangerfield. I'm an East Coast girl who now lives in Texas, and I'm a virtual integrator. And what that means is I am a business and strategy consultant, but I'm also an online business manager. So I help business owners, like entrepreneurs to small, medium businesses, bring clarity, alignment, and focus into what the heck they're trying to do and achieve. And the one thing that I really try to help people do is get themselves off that hamster wheel of like your mind is constantly going with your to-do lists and help you get focused, but then also help you get time back in your day. And that could be from developing a process and a system within your business. Because when you think about it, everything comes down to a process, from like how you make your cup of coffee to how you assemble maybe a product on a manufacturing floor. So that's really what I love to do. And gosh, I feel like I've been dinner table certified since like middle school with process improvement. I've been talking about this my entire life. So it's really what I just, it's my passion.
Well, and that's a great thing, because I think so many entrepreneur, you know, especially entrepreneur minded people, because I think, and you'll correct me if I'm wrong, I'm sure, but my little beady mind says there's sometimes a difference between a quote business person and an entrepreneur, right? They think differently at times. And as a true entrepreneur, it's real easy to get away from processes and just go do the stuff we want to do. And people ought to come in our door because we're here and we're the best and we're the greatest. And geez, I go do videos on social media, so people ought to come in the door. But and those are all important. Mm-hmm. But it's got to be part of the process, or else people still won't show up, right? And I love that whole concept, because that's probably one of my weaknesses is processes. And I'm really learning, and I talk about it a lot right now, being on the 75 Hard program, is it really helps teach discipline.
Yeah.
Because we're never fully motivated all the time. And I think a lot of people aren't process oriented all the time either, right? So that's mm-hmm. a discipline thing that you bring to the table. So am I somewhat spot on there?
You are. And I think one of the funny things about entrepreneurship is, like, I read this book called, I think it was Rocket Fuel, and they talk about the visionary and they talk about the integrator. And you have people that have these ideas and they can sell anything and they just come into a room and they just light it up. But then you have the person that organizes that chaos, that helps bring the idea to life. Both of them are entrepreneurs. It's just mm-hmm. two different types. And I think that's the interesting part, is because when I decided to become an entrepreneur, I was terrified. I was like, oh, I'm not creative. Like, I can't just hop on and talk to people and sell things and come up with ideas. But I think we leverage our weaknesses and we work on them so that we can achieve that next level. So like for you, working towards getting some processes and routines in place. For me, it's working on coming out of my bubble, out of my shell, and being more creative and out there.
Yeah. And, you know, that's a great point, because I know, again, I've become way better in my 8 million years of doing this thing that I do, but okay, 7.9, but I'm an exaggerator because I'm a sales guy. But, you know, it's like, I've kids sometimes, and it used to be more this way until I got better and understand the need to be better at processes. I understand the need. I just don't like them. But, exactly. Right, fair. But
fair.
In a perfect world, as a sales guy, and that's my business, is we rep manufacturers. If I could close a deal and everything else happens without my doing anything, I would be happy to go on to the next deal. I mean, if I didn't even have to tell my manufacturer what the deal was, if I price level, if I didn't have to tell them anything, I could just go on to the next one. Oh, I'd be super happy. Realize that can't be, right? But see, that's that entrepreneurial mind on steroids, right? That has to get yourself back to, okay, that's all great. Mm-hmm. But if I don't do these processes, this great deal that I just thought was wonderful last week unraveled pretty quickly, because nothing's going to happen that I promised the customer, because I never kind of told everybody and set the stage, right? So that's probably a challenge you face with the people you deal with, right?
Yeah, I'm actually helping a client right now. We're documenting all of their processes from onboarding. Like, as soon as the sales team hands off the client, we're doing the onboarding, the integration, how they're setting up. It's for an app, like a online app. Mm-hmm. And the person that's doing all this onboarding is also the developer. But at some point, the developer needs to get pulled out of the onboarding process. So we're now just capturing everything that he does from his brain onto a piece of paper, so that we can say, okay, how do we, one, what are we doing right now? Two, how can we simplify it and make it easier to replicate? And can we create any templates, or even just a welcome email, creating a template in your Gmail for it, and then the rest of the team is seeing this process. So now they know the journey for the customer. They know what to expect and what comes next. So then all hands are on deck. And I find that having that transparency among the team lets everybody feel more invested too. Not that they're doing the work, but they understand what's getting done and why, and then what that results in.
And you just said that. that magical three-letter word, the why, right? We all have to start with the why. And I've got to believe in what you do, that as entrepreneurs starting a new business or maybe a long ways into their business, and you just hit on it so well, we whoever's an entrepreneur can forget that my why better get transferred to you, and we need to agree together if we're going to work together as employees or whatever the case, partners, whatever it is, because if you don't understand my why, we're going to butt heads and or not be as effective or as fluid as we should be if we don't all understand the why here, right?
Yeah, and that's also part of the fun part that I get to do is because you have some crazy outlandish ideas that come from people that are like visionaries, the business owners. And it's like, okay, let's take your idea and let's translate it to where it actually other people can understand what you're trying to put together. And let's come up with a game plan to actually get us there. So it's giving them the why, then it's coming up with the how to actually do it and then executing.
Well, and I think that's a good point because I also think, and I use, this is probably a terrible term, but the ugly baby syndrome.
Okay.
And I don't say that a lot. I just said it everywhere. But is that just because you think this, everybody thinks their baby is like the cutest baby ever in the planet, right? Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know how many babies have been born since the planet was here. 85 billion. I don't know. It's a lot, right? But everybody has the cutest baby, except for sometimes they're not, but you think it is because it's yours and you're so close to it, right? And I think with entrepreneurs, it's their baby. And they don't want to listen to the fact, and I think other people in the business, and that's where I'm going with this, is how does an entrepreneur get the mindset with his people to be able to say, okay, it's a cute baby, but not as cute as you think. In other words, that your idea is great, but I need to be open with you and go, Kelsey, I like your idea, and you're the boss, it's your company, but man, I think we could do some things differently, right? And how do you as an entrepreneur, and how do you teach entrepreneurs to be better at being open and not the king on the throne, right? And or the queen on the throne, and everybody else just kind of sets at your feet and listens to you, right? Because that's never going to get the results we want, right?
Yeah. And that's a hard one. And that's where it really comes down to the person and if they're open to that kind of conversation. So one thing that I like to do is kind of when you have somebody who loves what their idea so much, and maybe it is the ugly baby, maybe it's not there. That's where it's like, okay, you know, this is really great. Let's maybe bring in the team and we can do a what's right, what's wrong, what's confused, what's missing exercise. So we talk about like, what's right? What do you love about the idea? Okay, what's wrong with it? What are some things that don't really work? And it's kind of anonymous where everybody just writes it down. And then you can do what's confused. So what's confusing about this idea? What does not make sense? And then you do your what's missing. And it's like, okay, what are other ideas that we could bring into the fold that might connect these dots better? And so that's one exercise that I find when you have somebody who may not take the feedback really well or the critique is you do an exercise like that where it's very open. Or you can do it as like a survey to where there's no names captured and people have that kind of protection. But I find that that helps because then it's an us. It's not like a people don't like my idea. It's, hey, it's our idea now. Let's make this better as a team. So yeah, that's just one way of doing it.
No, I think that makes a lot of sense. I use a term because I used to throw spitballs at people in school because that was always fun to do and then pretend like, wait, why are you looking at me? What I do? Mm-hmm. But so I like the idea of spitballs, even though probably a little more formal way to say brainstorming. Right. But you know, I love the concept of throwing that spitballs up on the whiteboard, write it all down. Don't matter how there is no dumb ideas right now. Right.
No.
And I do that with myself when I'm walking, when I'm writing, when I'm sitting around the fire at night, I write down anything that pops in my goofy little head, and probably 98% of it I end up scratching and throwing away because I was like, in the heat of the moment, that sounded brilliant until I realized that it not really. Mm-hmm. But I've several things that I've done in my life, I've done by doing that because I look at it and I don't throw it away. And I look at it again and I don't throw it away. And then I start going, oh, maybe that's not that an idea, maybe it kind of growing on me a little bit. So, and I think a little bit along what you're talking about, I think that's a great idea with an entrepreneur, right? With his people.
Yeah.
Is to brainstorm, that'd be an airplane. Brainstorm. We could barnstorm too. That'd be a nice team building event, I suppose. Yeah. A little dangerous. OSHA might get involved, but you know, either brainstorm, spitball, whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. But I think that takes a special relationship that the entrepreneur, the boss, has to foster, because the fear is always going to be with the employees until you build that relationship tight.
Yep.
Well, I can't say this because he's not going to like that, or she's not going to like that, or they're going to think this is stupid, or they're going to think I'm picking at their idea and they are the boss. So that's pretty crucial, right, for that boss, whatever his position, her position is, to foster that relationship where there's a comfort level, right?
100%, because at the end of the day, we're all going towards the same goal. And I think having that openness, the transparency with your team is key. Like a couple of my clients right now, they're very much of the idea of like, I only can know so much. So I need to bring on other minds that are just as brilliant, if not more brilliant than mine, because they're going to fill a gap for me. So if you're, if you're trusting people and you're bringing them into your business, use them as a sounding board. They may have some ideas out there that you may not come up with. So I think having that transparency and open relationship does help.
Well, and especially if you're a strong enough person to hire people, to bring people into your business that you would hope are smarter than you, mm-hmm. especially in areas that you're not as good at, right?
Yeah,
because and people can be intimidated by that at any level, whether you're an entrepreneur and it's your business or whether you're a management person in a large organization. The reality is you should be, you know, the old theory, we've all heard it a million times. You should hire people under you that can replace you, right?
Because, train yourself out of a job.
Right. Train yourself up. So the only way you're going to be able to move on if it's in a large company is you better have a replacement. So that you can move on. And if you're an entrepreneur, you better have those people helping you in your weaknesses, because there is none of us that are going to be strong in everything. We're lucky if there's one or two things we're probably really strong in. Probably the first is the idea, but most entrepreneurs are probably missing a lot of those talent levels that they need, right?
Mm-hmm. And I think it's just like, because I, even myself, when it comes to wanting to expand and grow, it's that fear of bringing somebody on that's not going to do it just like you, is going to have a different approach. And that's one thing, that the importance of capturing processes. And I find people find processes to be a scary word, especially if you're not somebody in the operations area. For us, it's like, oh, yeah. But for other people, it's kind of intimidating. And the one thing I can say is a process is like a routine that you just wrote down. So like, say you wanted your spouse to make you a cup of coffee every morning and you're really particular about it. You want 1 teaspoon of sugar and 1 tablespoon of milk. If you write it down, they're going to make you the perfect cup of coffee every time. Just like a process. If you want someone to do it a certain way, write it down so then they can help you with it, or even do a video recording. And I think that's part of that fear of finding people that can help you grow your business, scale your business, and keep your process in there. But then you also get their input to maybe make it more efficient, to streamline things, to make user experiences better for your customers. So pretty fun.
You know, and that makes a lot of sense, because I made a note here as you were talking, different mindsets and different people come from different places. And in today's world, I listened to if I could remember her name, I'd say it, but she talked about 2 or 3 years ago, how some businesses literally have up to 5 generations now. You know, you got the old guy still sitting there at 86 years old, but he's around. He started the company mostly in family businesses, right? Mm-hmm. And you got the young pup at 18, 19, 20. And the difference between experience, but you think about it. Many, many people didn't live through 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That, I mean, it's something they read about or they see once in a while and they go, oh, that really was awful. And they move on.
Yeah.
That, and we're in age groups that you sit there in awe and in despair and what is going on to our world. We're totally different on that subject. Right. They're never going to understand it because they weren't there. Mm-hmm. And we're never going to understand why they don't understand it, right? Because we were, and I don't understand why you can't get how awful that day was, right?
No.
But they can't because they weren't there. You know, all of us are like that with World War II. It was an awful thing, but it's easy for me to pass it off as an awful thing and you read about it and you move on, right? Because I didn't live through it. So how do you work with those multi-dimensional or multi-generational, I guess I should say, in businesses? Because there are a lot of differences between Gen X's and Gen Z's and millennials and boomers and all that, right? How do you work on bringing all those people to some sort of an understanding? Process has to be part of it, right?
Yeah. Gosh, I think it's one, you understand the people. Like, I find that the art of picking up a phone is very lost these days. People don't really do that. And then you have people that are happy to answer you immediately on an IM or a Google Chat, Slack, whatever you use, or they can do videos like this and have video meetings. So I think it's understanding who likes to communicate how, what's their preferred method, and then slowly breaking down the barriers, trying to think of different ways we've done this. It's partnering people that are in different similar areas to where you kind of have like a seasoned professional and somebody a little bit newer and have them partner on a project together and start getting people a little bit more integrated. I find that that really helps just so that people can start learning more about each other. And then it bridges that knowledge gap over time. But I know I didn't completely answer that. That one's a hard one. I think that's more of a in the moment too, figuring out the personalities.
Yeah, that's probably a lot of it. And that leads to a circle back on that a second. Like to put things into sports, right? In a coach, there's basic rules and basic operation and basic MO, right, that we're going to do. Mm-hmm. But successful coaches, I think, have to learn to treat each player. If you got 12 players, 15 players on your basketball team, I don't care if it's high school or college or the NBA, there are also 15 different personalities. The basics are, the team rules is you're in your room at 10 o'clock or you don't play tomorrow. That one is that's a no go, that either you do or you don't.
Yep.
But some players you can get in their face and you can scream and yell at them because that's what motivates them. The other player is going to shut you out and you got to be more of the mom or the dad to them, right? And pat them on the back and say, yeah, okay, so you messed up. It's no big deal, right? So isn't that a lot in the same thing as an entrepreneur coaching, if you will, his people or her people? You still got to treat each of them a little bit differently, not unfairly, not like give advantages as more pay or those sort of things, but just on how you communicate on your day-to-day level with them, right?
Yep. Gosh, you hit the nail on the head with that. That made me think of like DISC profiles. And you have people that are like direct, like that. You can just say it to them. There's people that they may need a minute to process and they can't give you an answer immediately. So they may need some of that time. Mm-hmm. There's somebody that may be like, I want the data first. I need to understand this. And you're right, because thinking of my clients right now, they are all completely different personalities and they all get their work done completely different, communicate differently. And it's really adjusting my approach for them to be able to receive what I'm saying and vice versa. And that's one thing where I think, again, that conversation and that trust with one another, I mean, you don't get trust right off the bat. You don't build that comfort level. But I think with being open and transparent and setting the stage with people like, hey, what's your preferred method to communicate? What do you prefer in the moment feedback? Like if something's good, do you need examples? And I think that helps really break down the barrier of communication between people, especially with the different generations that are out there right now.
Yeah.
Like I know I have a client who is very East Coast. We grew up in went to the same schools, but a couple years apart. When I talk to him, it's a very different type of conversation and communication versus a client from Michigan that I work with that I love. It's just two different personality types.
Right. Right. Neither one's good. Neither one's better or worse than the other, just different. Yeah. And if you're going to win the day on that, you're going to have to figure that out pretty quickly. Yeah. Right.
So it's fun too.
Oh, I'm sure it is. So a lot of this that we've been talking about is getting buy-in from your people, right? Because I fully believe, and I'm going to make a statement, you'll tell me if I'm wrong, please do, but you I guess a management style is to say it's my way or the highway. Just shut up and do what I tell you. It's going to be this way, and I don't want no input. I just want you to show up at this time and do it exactly what I tell you. A week clear. That's one way. Mm-hmm. Probably not very successful in today's world. But how do you get people to actually buy in? Not just, oh, I'm going to do this process because that's the process Kelsey said to do, and she's going to yell at me if I don't do it. But how do we get people to buy into, I'm going to do this process not because Kelsey told me to and she's the boss, but because I agree with it. It makes sense to me. I understand it. That's pretty important, yeah, I think.
It is. And I think that's where it's bringing in the team and getting everybody's input on it. So with one of my clients, we are writing out SOPs for onboarding a new business. And he does majority of this work, but we're having sales team members in there and we're having another developer in there so they can hear the process and provide feedback. They may not be completely involved with it, but they can give their two cents because it's still a customer journey, which touches what they do. And I think that's part of that buy-in is it's not just saying, okay, these are the instructions, go execute. It's, hey, this is what we have. Do you see anywhere we can improve it? Do you have any ideas? And that's where the brainstorming comes in and that developing of the relationships.
Yeah. And that's a great point because I'm blessed as a rep agency, all the manufacturers that I work with, I'm blessed that they ask for a lot of buy-in from the sales team. I mean, to the point that really, if you're not bought in, we're probably not going to do this because they understand we're the ones that have to go out. And if we don't believe in it, I'll sell some because I kind of like making money, but I'm not going to be as effective if I'm not fully on board with this, right? The product or the service for what we're doing. So I think that's a real key and hats off to people that do that. I want to talk, this one kind of is always interesting to me. Weaknesses versus strengths, right? We all have weaknesses and we all have strengths. Which do we play to? Which do we work on the most, right? Because my concept is this. I think sometimes a lot of people think I need to work on my weaknesses because they're weaknesses. I got to get better at them. And then they forget about their strengths. And I think it's a fine line that we got to walk with that. I'd love to hear your input on that.
For me, it's pick, like when you have your strengths, you have your weaknesses, you want to keep nourishing. You want to keep pushing and growing your strengths and building those because things, especially in today's world, things become outdated very quickly. And for weaknesses, it's assess what they are and then prioritize. Is there a solution out there that can fix them? Is there something where you can go take a class? Like for me, I cannot spell. I can't spell. I have a slight dyslexia. I flip my letters all the time. So I invested in Grammarly. It's an add-on for my computer and it helps. It catches so many of my errors and it fixes things for me. That was a weakness. I don't know how many times in interviews, that was what I told them. It's like, I can't spell. I flip letters. And they're like, really? I'm like, yeah, I get it. I work on it. That's just how it is. So it's really like you want to keep nourishing your mind on the strengths that you have because that's what people are coming to you for. That's what your bread and butter is. And you don't want to lose that, especially if you love it. And then pick one weakness at a time and chip away at it. So if it's something like mine where I purchased Grammarly to help me, then there you go. Problem not completely gone, but I have support.
Yeah,
and that's where you just kind of pick like one thing at a time and chip away at it.
So what do you do when you spell, because you and I are on the same page, when you spell so bad that Grammarly goes, what are you talking about? That
mean? I keep trying. I'm like, nope, that wasn't it.
Probably one of my biggest weaknesses is I need to follow this might be the 59th Street Bridge song by Simon and Garfunkel, but I think it slow down, you move too fast.
Oh, yeah.
And that is probably my biggest weakness is I get too ahead of myself because my mind is very entrepreneurial and big picture. And when something pops in my head, like right now, if I had a brilliant idea, I think is brilliant that I want to do right now while we're talking, I would be going north. Yeah, you see, Wes gets it. Wes understands. He does Randy speak, which is good. Mm-hmm. But if I was literally, Kelsey, if I got this brilliant idea in my head right now, I would almost be sending a private chat to Wes saying, cut her off. I need to go. I mean, I want to go right now. And so I have to really train myself to step back a little bit. And I really do it when I do posts. And I do, that's what Wes is talking about. I do posts. I do, I'm always, I think I'm watching, but I'm in such excitement that I want to say what I want to say. That then I always have, I bet you I edit 60% of my posts, literally, hopefully, right after I do them, because I get it up. And I go, ah, you dummy. They go, I have to hit the edit and go back and change words. I left the word out. Mm-hmm. But I also think on that, the E before I and I before E thing should go away. Work on that for me. That's just dumb. I don't like it at all. Wes did a post the other day that had this whole sentence of all these E before I words that were like all these words that don't follow the rule. Mm-hmm. It's like, can we follow the rule one way or the other? I mean, why do we have to call Newt Rockne with a K? I don't understand that at all. But anyways, that's a whole story for another day. But that's my issue with English. But so you've been kind with your time. And as we wind down a little bit, I want two things quickly. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't have to be quickly, but you talked about focus and getting your focus back and helping entrepreneurs get their time back.
Yeah.
What does that mean? Are we talking balance? Are we talking the life-work balance, or more time for work, or a combination of? And what's that look like in the world of Kelsey?
Great question. To me, it's a blend. So it's a lot of upfront work. One thing that I love to do with people when we kick off like a partnership is we do a 90-minute strategy session, and we do a brain dump. And the brain dump is essentially, you get all of the ideas out of your brain, all of the problems out of your brain. And then now we come up with a plan for them. And by getting everything out of your head, you're going to start to be able to focus. And you're going to be able to just say, okay, take a breath. And then we work on what's important now. And then what's something that we can chip away at. And you can even do this. Like every week I do 3 goals of the week. I have a high, a medium, and a low. My low goal is something I can knock out in 20 minutes. My medium goal is something that's going to take an hour. And my high goal is something that's going to take 2 hours of focus time. And by keeping it simple, by giving yourself something to measure for success, you can check off your to-do list, but then it pulls that worry, that action item, that to-do list item out of your brain. And if you're struggling to just get focused, my number one recommendation is you brain dump, which people say journaling, whatever floats your boat, just writing everything down on a piece of paper and just get it out of your head. And that is really the first thing that I recommend when it's trying to get focused.
I wrote that down, brain dump. I'm gonna dump everything out of my brain this evening, which will take about 13 seconds. And then we'll have plenty of room for goofy things to go off on. Well, awesome. So as we kind of wrap up, we're running in, Wes is running across the bottom of the screen, how to get a hold of you. But a should ask question I have is, what will people get if they get a hold of Kelsey Dangerfield? No relation to Rodney, because there's an I in there. See, we talk about that I thing.
Yep.
It shouldn't be there. Take that out of there. What are people going to get if they get a hold of you? And sum it up, because you've done great in the last 40 minutes of telling us all of it. But in a nutshell, what's the value of getting a hold of you and putting a program together like tomorrow or this afternoon or right now, as soon as we're done?
It's getting time back. And that's one thing that I'm very good at, is hearing everything that's going on, the chaos between work and life, because I find it's a blend. It's not a balance. There's going to be days where you're going to have to focus on your kids a little bit more. You're going to have to focus on the business a little bit more. And that's one thing that I help people do, is take a step back, figure out the priorities, and then work through them. And one of my clients right now, he's been running his business for 13 plus years, about 30 hours a week while working another job. And we were just talking the other day, and he's like, I work 5 hours a week, 5 hours a week in my business, maybe 10 if we have a lot of client work going on. He's like, but that drastic change. So that's one thing that I like harp on, and I ring my bell, and I'm really proud of, is it's helping people get that time back so that you can have a life, you can breathe. And it's just something I love.
That's awesome. So that did make me, and I got to keep you like one more minute or two,
fine,
because I that's my little hamster brain running, right? Yeah. Is the calendar and how you keep yourself organized. Mm-hmm. Do you like the concept of a business calendar separate from a personal calendar? Or you said blend. I do them together because I can't separate the two because they're intermixed. I mean, they just are. But is there a right or wrong, or is it really depend on the person?
It depends on the person. So for me, my calendar, I have it color coded. So stuff that's for my family or for like me, eat lunch, it's one color. If I have client work, it's another. If I have client calls, it's another. And I keep it organized like that. I tried doing like the ideal calendar, my work calendar, my kids' calendar, and it was just a hot mess. So for me, I do a color code. So if I see pink, I know it's my stuff. If I see blue, I know it's a call. If I see dark blue, I know it's work.
So, but you do them all on the same calendar, just color coded.
Yes.
So you can see, I can do this and this, but my kids got a soccer game at 4. And that's important, and I'm not skipping it, right? So it's there because I used to run two calendars for business and personal, and then started doing the podcasting thing, whether hosting or guesting, and then I ran that separately, and then after like somebody said, well, could you do it at 4 o'clock? And I'm going through three calendars trying to figure out, and I messed up too many times because I didn't always see one or the other. So I was curious about that because it's all on the same calendar. I know exactly what I've got going for anything.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to get your opinion on that. So good.
No, it's a great question. It's funny. That's calendar, inbox, and Google Drive. Those are the things that kind of kicked off my business, was getting people's inboxes organized so that I could work for them instead of them having 100. I think the most I've seen in an inbox was like 440,000 unread emails. And helping people, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I guess.
But getting that cleaned up and then getting your drive cleaned up, getting your calendar cleaned up, because those are the gateways to our lives. Those are the way that people can work with us. We can meet with our family. We have time to spend with our kids. So if you can get those things aligned and working for you, it's going to help remove a lot of that chaos that you're experiencing.
Exactly. Beautiful. Love it. Anything else? Have we touched on everything you want to today? Because this was, I'm going to use a brilliant word, and I seldom use that. I do it with Wes because he has the ability to shut me off anytime he wants, but that was a really good stuff. It was excellent stuff. I got notes here. I got a whole page of notes. I'm going to learn a lot from this today. So thank you for that. And so people can get a hold of you, and you're taking on clients, I assume.
Yep. So I'm opening my books for consulting clients. So I do 2 sessions a month. Could be really whatever works best for you. I find with a lot of people, they like to do 90-minute calls and then follow up 32 weeks later for that accountability piece. Mm-hmm. But really, it's really anything that somebody needs. It's helping just get your business strategy down. If you have a launch coming up, getting it out of your head, getting it on paper, and then executing it. So I am taking clients for that. My OBM clients, online business management, I have 1 spot left, and we will see if that one's available. I have a couple leads coming in right now, but good. Yeah, I'm always happy to help. I want to help people find the perfect blend for them so that they can have a life and love what they do at the same time.
Yeah. I love that word. I that's one of them that I highlighted here is the blend. I'm write it again. So I don't, cause I scratched over the blend. I like that because we all use that balance thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I like the blend because to me that fits, it's more commonsensical. We're not balancing, we're blending it together. And we can literally go from spouse or significant other to uncle to grandpa to grandma to mom to business, all in a matter of minutes or hours in a day, right? So it is a blend.
I
like that. I like that term a lot. So,
and I think it just adapts to everybody's different stage in life. Like I'm in an entrepreneur group where I'm a mom with 2 kids under the age of 5, and everybody's like, whoa. There's people with teenagers. There's ones with grandchildren, and it's, we're all in different phases of our lives. And I think finding the perfect blend for you in your current situation is the only way that you're going to be able to enjoy your life in every aspect.
Right. And I think that's a good point because as we move through stages of life, that blend will change.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that's being cognizant of that with your people is important too, because at my age, I might think, I work all the time because I love what I do and I do what I love. We've already established that, right? But you're 23 and you got a new baby and you got a husband and you got this stuff. Your priorities are not the same.
Nope.
But you're darn good at what you do. And if I want to make this work, I better figure out how we do this together, right?
Yeah.
That's the key. Beautiful. Kelsey, amazing stuff. Thank you.
Thank you. This was a lot of fun. I really appreciate it.
It was great stuff. I appreciate you. Stay amazing and be a hybrid. See ya. Thanks. Bye-bye. All right. Look at that. That was some good stuff by Kelsey. I got like pages of notes. Good stuff with Kelsey. Get a hold of her if she can help you. If you listen to this for the full 45 minutes or so, 40 minutes, you know she's got some good stuff there. So for now, I'm going to get out of here. But don't forget this. We talked about this. Love what you do and do what you love. You know, you'll get one go around on planet Earth, at least. That's what we know. That's what we think. That's what we believe. So live it, love it, own it. And always make today your best day ever. Till tomorrow. Cheers, my friends.
Thank you for listening to Building Wins Live.
You can find information on Randy, Wes, our guests, show notes, and anything related to the podcast at buildingwins.live. On behalf of the whole Building Wins team, don't forget, make today your best day ever. Until tomorrow.